This is VOA News, reporting by remote. I'm Joe Ramsey. Leaders of Southeast Asian countries on Saturday reached agreement towards resolving the crisis in military-ruled Myanmar at an emergency meeting in Indonesia. Six heads of state and three foreign ministers met for 2 hours in Jakarta with Myanmar's top general and coup leader. The chair of the group says there are 5 points of agreement on a resolution plan. They include talks between opposition leaders, ending violence, allowing humanitarian help in the country, releasing political prisoners, and appointing a special regional envoy for the Myanmar crisis. But the military cracked down on anti-coup protesters on Saturday, killing at least one, according to a witness. There's anger over the invitation to Myanmar's junta leader to join the regional summit, the general's first overseas trip since he seized power. The country has been in turmoil since the military ousted civilian leader Aung San Suu Kyi on February 1st, leading to large protests demanding a return to democracy. A demonstration on motorbikes outside Myanmar's capital turned violent Saturday when police and soldiers opened fire. A local monitoring group says it adds to the more than 740 people killed since the coup. Israel's warplane struck the Gaza Strip Saturday after Palestinians fired rockets into Israel following a second night of clashes in East Jerusalem. The Israeli army says 63 rockets were launched, the most in a single night this year. The U.S. says it's deeply concerned by the escalating violence, while the European Union is calling for restraint. Israeli security forces have been clashing with Palestinians angry about Ramadan restrictions. Find more on these stories and the rest of the day's news at voanews.com. This is VOA News. India has set another world record for daily coronavirus infections. Near the 350,000 new cases were reported Saturday, the third straight day with a global record high mark. Patients and families are overwhelming New Delhi hospitals, with India facing a surging second wave of the COVID-19 pandemic. Doctors say there is now one death every 4 minutes in the capital city. India's health minister is calling for patients, saying there is no need to create panic and to run to hospitals for minor issues, but some patients say they are being turned away. Officials say there's a shortage of beds, medical oxygen, and healthcare workers. Germany is the latest of several countries to restrict travel from India following Canada, Britain, Iran, the United Arab Emirates, and Kuwait. Berlin's health minister said Saturday a new variant has made the South Asian country a coronavirus hotspot. German citizens will still be allowed to enter the country when arriving from India after testing and quarantine. U.S. President Joe Biden will formally recognize genocide in modern-day Turkey committed against the Armenian people by the Ottoman Empire more than a century ago. Officials said Saturday President Biden will use a presidential proclamation to mark Armenian Genocide Remembrance Day. U.S. presidents for decades have acknowledged Remembrance Day to mark the events of 1915 to 1923, but have avoided using the term genocide in fears of angering Turkey. The AP reports a source says Biden told Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan of his plans during a telephone call on Friday. Indonesia's Navy says items have been found from a missing submarine, indicating the vessel with 53 crew members has sunk. Officials said Saturday that rescuers found several items. Indonesia earlier considered the submarine that disappeared on Thursday off Bali as just missing, but it now declares the submarine as officially sank with no hopes of finding any survivors. Oxygen supply for its 53 crew would have run out early Saturday. And Disneyland Paris is reopening, not for major vacations, but for mass vaccinations. A new center opened Saturday, and it wasn't Mickey and Minnie Mouse, rather firefighters and health workers. Thousands of roller coaster riders are being replaced by thousands of shots into arms. Disneyland Paris has been closed since October. The country says about 1 in 4 French adults has received at least one COVID-19 vaccine. Reporting by remote, I'm Joe Ramsey, VOA News.
Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you live from the English service of the Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Douglas Impuga. Peter Clote has the day off.
I don't agree that our farmers toil and suffer to get market for their produce, and then you are telling me the quality. Which quality, which has fed us? All of you are eating Ugandan food. You buy from the market here. We also want our market for our food.
Uganda threatens to ban imports of food for refugees by the World Food Program unless the UN agency buys locally from Ugandan farmers.
As soon as we can start rolling out the vaccine for the over 60s, it means that our healthcare facilities will be able to handle the third wave a lot better than what we could in the first or second waves.
South Africa suspends the Johnson & Johnson vaccine due to concerns of rare forms of blood clots linked to the vaccine.
When you commit these types of atrocities, nobody is above the law, and they should be held accountable. So people that are involved in these types of criminal activities and crimes against humanity and targeting innocent women, children, and men, they should be held accountable.
A Nigerian civil society groups call on the International Criminal Court, the ICC, to launch an independent investigation into what they say are the ongoing human rights abuses committed by the military. Those stories and more coming up right here on Nightline Africa. The sudden death of Chad's president, Idris Deby, this week has raised concern about the country's stability and the joint fight against regional terrorist groups like Nigeria's Boko Haram. Nigeria and Chad have long been allies against Islamic insurgents, but analysts say Deby's death could complicate the picture. Timothy Biezu reports from the Nigerian capital, Abuja.
A state funeral held Friday in the capital, N'Djamena, was attended by many heads of state, including Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari, despite warnings from rebel groups threatening attacks. Earlier in the week, Buhari tweeted, quote, "I am deeply shocked and devastated," end quote. President Idris Deby died Monday suffering from wounds he sustained while visiting frontline troops battling rebels in northern Chad. His sudden death raises concerns of stability in Chad and in the wider Sahel region, where Chadian troops contribute significantly to the fight against insurgent groups. Political analyst Rotimi Olawale says troops could be shifting focus to domestic issues first and not regional security.
The first focus for the Chadian government would likely be consolidating power in Chad, and therefore I would not be surprised that in the immediate term the focus would be on domestic security within Chad.
Last year, Nigeria, Chad, and Niger started a joint operation to eliminate terrorist groups Boko Haram and its Islamic affiliates. Security expert Kabiru Adamu worries that Deby's death could stall regional security progress.
Gaps would be created, and these are the gaps that would likely lead to an escalation of the current security situation in several parts of the Sahel region. Chad, under President Idris Deby, was a stabilization force. What will happen in the long term is a bit uncertain.
But Olawale says other regional forces must work together to prevent an uptick in violence.
We hope that the regional actors, especially Nigeria and other neighboring countries, Cameroon, Niger, Chad, continue to work together to ensure that terrorist groups do not explore loopholes within the security architecture.
Nigeria this week beefed up border security to prevent an influx of people from Chad, said the country's defense minister. The 68-year-old Deby ruled Chad for 30 years and was re-elected to his sixth term in office just days before his death. Chadian military authorities ignored the constitution and appointed his son, Mahamat Idris Deby, to lead a ruling council for 18 months until a new government is elected. Timothy Obiezu for VOA News, Abuja, Nigeria.
Nigeria civil society groups are calling on the International Criminal Court, the ICC, to launch an independent investigation into what they say are the ongoing human rights abuses committed by the military. They expressed concern about what they say is the alarming escalation of insecurity in the nation, including targeted kidnappings and murder. The groups also say it appears the government is not able to improve security in the West African country. But supporters of the government reject the accusations and cite successes the military has achieved, including stepped-up efforts to combat Islamic militants, including Boko Haram. Dr. Allen White is a partner of BW Global Group in Washington, D.C. The organization works with other groups to promote human rights and seeks justice and accountability for victims of gross human rights violations and crimes against humanity. He tells VOA's Peter Klote that the U.S. government should refuse to sell military equipment to Nigeria if the ongoing human rights violations continue. His organization, he adds, supports calls for the Hague-based court to go after those responsible for any rights violations in Nigeria.
Well, it's clear that we have seen an uptick in violence, and not just from Boko Haram. We've seen the recent targeting of civilians, innocent civilian men and women and children in the South and Southeast, particularly targeted against Igbos and the indigenous people of Biafra by the Fulani herdsmen, which are not being stopped by the Nigerian government, and recent attacks of Nigerian military, the Air Force attacks on 9 April that occurred in Akwa. So these things are intensifying daily, and we believe that these are serious crimes that need to be considered to be investigated and prosecuted by the international court, because they're clearly crimes against humanity for murder and targeting innocent civilian population.
But Alan, groups such as IPOB or the indigenous people of Biafra have been described as a terrorist organization by the Nigerian government. The government accuses members of the group of carrying out attacks, and that is why the military would have to clamp down as part of the mandate to ensure stability, peace, and to protect life and property. How do you respond to such criticism?
In coordination with UN authorities, as we started to pursue supporting advocacy for human rights and accountability, we learned that the indigenous people of Biafra are clearly the largest and most organized, well-organized group of opposition to the government of Nigeria. So it stands to reason that they might politically want to do this because it makes it easier to get rid of opposition. But they do have a history of going after opposition. So it's not surprising, at least in our assessment and analysis of the situation, that this was for political reason, because currently the Fulani herdsmen are indiscriminately killing Christians, taking their property, burning their property, displacing them throughout the South and Southeast without any intervention by the government. Why aren't they designated as a terrorist organization? So we see that there's seemingly a political overtone on this, and it makes sense for political reasons that you would want to target your largest opposition. However, this goes against all international norms and certainly the UN Charter, where the people of a particular country or any country, the number one issue of the government is to protect its people.
Well, some people are suggesting that some in the North have also been affected by this, and the government is trying its best to try to stabilize the situation, and that calling on the International Criminal Court to investigate and to prosecute alleged criminals basically is interfering in the internal dynamics in Nigeria. How do you respond to that?
Well, clearly, under international law of armed conflict, the military must follow the rules of engagement. And they do not do that. Fighting terrorist organization, clearly Boko Haram is a serious threat. So is the Islamic West African province, state West African province. However, the Nigerian military must follow the international norms and law of armed conflict. And that's why we're deeply concerned. There was a recent bombing of Igbos and personnel recently in Akwa On April 9th, the Nigerian Air Force bombed secret bombings and killed several indigenous people of Biafra. And there's an impending sale of A-29 Tucano super aircraft, which were originally approved to target terrorists basically up north. But with this increased attacks and indiscriminate use of military hardware against Igbos and indigenous people of Biafra, we see that as a serious problem, and that's why we're alerting the U.S. Congress to reconsider the sale of those aircraft if they're going to potentially be misused against the civilian population.
So where does your group go from here, following your support for the International Criminal Court to investigate and prosecute those responsible for the ongoing atrocities being committed or violence being committed in Nigeria?
Our goal principally is to make people aware of the seriousness and the acts of violence and crimes against humanity that's being committed in Nigeria, and seeking accountability. Nobody is above the rule of law. As you know, when we pursued Charles Taylor for justice as a sitting head of state of Liberia, who claimed he had immunity, he did not have immunity. When you commit these types of atrocities, nobody is above the law, and they should be held accountable for that. So people that are involved in these types of criminal activities and crimes against humanity and targeting innocent women, children, and men, they should be held accountable.
That was Dr. Alan White, a partner at BW Global Group in Washington, D.C. He spoke with my colleague, Peter Clote. In Somalia, opposition leaders have welcomed a rare move by the African Union to condemn a term extension by lawmakers for themselves and the president. Somalia's information minister was less receptive to the measure and accused Kenya and Djibouti of interfering with Somalia's internal affairs. Muhammad Kahie reports from Mogadishu.
The African Union Peace and Security Committee expressed deep concern over the vote by Somalia's lower house of parliament this month to extend the mandate of President Mohamed Abdullahi Farmajo. The organization said the move, which effectively postponed the country's already delayed elections, also undermines the unity and stability of the Horn of African state. Lawmakers extended Farmajo's mandate for another 2 years after months of failed talks on holding parliamentary and presidential elections. Political leaders were unable to agree on the electoral process, despite heavy pressure from the AU, the United States, and the European Union. On Friday, the federal government of Somalia welcomed a renewed initiative by the African Union to facilitate talks on holding elections. But the federal government also blamed Kenya and Djibouti for engaging in what the Information Minister Osman Dube described as a sinister campaign to derail the political process in Somalia through their influence in the commission. He says the Somali government will not accept interference by the African Union into its domestic affairs. He added, intervention in internal affairs violates the founding principles of the continental body, which Somalia was among the pioneers. Djibouti Government Minister for Economy and Finance, Elias Musa Dawale, denied Somalia's accusation, saying it undermines core values of peace and stability. However, Somalia's opposition senator Elias Ali said he appreciates AU's intervention.
I applaud the condemnation made by the African Union Peace and Security Council of the lower house decision to extend its term and the term of the president. I appreciate the African Union Peace and Security Council sees it the same way as we see. I would like also to emphasize, of course, our desire to continue collaborating with our African brothers for the better Somalia.
The African Union is expected to send a special envoy to oversee the efforts to resolve the stalemate over the polls. Political analyst Mohamed Musi Aden predicts the AU intervention will bring the sides to end their differences.
The African Union's involvement is very, very much significant because there's a trust deficit between the government and its rivals. Therefore, bridging that gap, African solution for African problems is badly needed here. This will pave the way for a broad-based dialogue and eventually lead to broker a deal, ending the political quagmire and the electoral deadlock.
The international partners in Somalia, led by the United States, also welcomed African Union mediation and urged Somalia's leaders to agree to a way forward to resolve the electoral crisis urgently. Mohamed Kaye for VOA News in Mogadishu, Somalia.
Uganda's government has threatened to ban imports of food for refugees by the World Food Program, saying the UN agency should buy locally from Ugandan farmers. Catherine Nambi reports from Kampala.
Uganda is host to nearly 1.5 million refugees who are entitled to food assistance to meet their daily dietary needs. The UN World Food Program, or WFP, says it distributes locally and regionally procured emergency food assistance, such as beans, maize and sorghum, to refugees and asylum seekers in Uganda. However, the Ugandan government is accusing the WFP of importing most of the refugee food relief and buying little or no food from Ugandan farmers. Hilary Onek is Uganda's Minister for Relief, Disaster Preparedness and Refugees.
All these Ugandans you see, including me, tall as I am, I'm eating our food here, I haven't died. These people are coming to our country. We have to import food to feed them when we have our own food. If they don't want to eat our food, let them go where the other food is. I don't agree that our farmers toil and suffer to get market for their produce, and then you are telling me the quality. Which quality, which has fed us? All of you are eating Ugandan food. You buy from the market here. We also want our market. For our food.
Onek has threatened that the Ugandan government will block the importation of refugee food relief to create a market for Ugandan farmers.
I will discuss this with my cabinet colleagues, and we are going to cause no procurement of food from outside Uganda by the World Food Program. Let the money remain here. There are a lot of food around here. Cereals are there. I don't see the reason why our farmers smuggle food like maize and so on to Kenya. And Kenya process, then the World Food Program goes and buy from Kenya and bring it back to Uganda. Why do you do that? That has been going on. So we need now to stop any import of food by World Food Program. They must buy from here.
Rosa Malango is the UN resident coordinator in Uganda. She says the UN is working on helping Ugandan farmers overcome practices that compromise the quality of food, like poor storage, which she says is the reason most of the refugees' provisions are imported.
Our World Food Program, FAO, IFAD, and several other organizations are already working at the community level to improve post-harvest handling. We are already making certain purchases where it's possible, and we're seeing how to expand the quality as close as possible to the parish model. So just to reiterate that we're looking forward to increasing in scale as we increase in quality.
El Kadri Dalom is the World Food Program Uganda representative. He says the WFP is currently working on a program to bring more Ugandan farmers on board to supply quality foods for refugees.
Through agriculture market support program, we continue to work with farmers and different cooperatives to support and train them in the aggregation of food so that we can be able to acquire the metric tonnage that we need to be able to provide to the refugees and the people in the host community. So it's not that we're not buying. We're buying, but we're not maybe buying at the scale that you would want. But as we progress in providing the additional training, both for the quality issues, we hope that we will continue to improve.
Although some refugees have opted for cash rations, the dependence on food aid by refugees in Uganda still remains high and may remain so for the foreseeable future. This is Catherine Nambi for VOA News in Kampala.
The South African government has suspended the Johnson & Johnson vaccine following concerns of rare forms of blood clots linked to the vaccine. The suspension, health analysts say, has sharply affected the South African government's vaccine efforts. This has prompted private firms, including Medscheme, one of the country's largest medical administrators,
to help with the government's vaccination plans. It also comes as experts warn of a possible COVID-19 wave to hit the country. To learn more about the company's vaccination plans and how the government is handling the vaccine process, VOA's Peter Kilote reached Ahmed Bandeka, CEO of Mediskim.
So our organization is really in control of 3.9 million lives who all belong to private medical insurance. Our role is to ensure that we get that vaccine to them as speedily as possible as government makes the supply of the vaccine available. Our role will be to ensure that we can direct all of those members of ours, the 3.9 million lives, to the appropriate vaccination sites that we're going to be setting up countrywide, utilizing our 3,000 registered nurses to assist and aid with the actual vaccination process.
What is your take on why the Johnson & Johnson vaccine rollout was suspended in South Africa?
So the suspension was following, in fact, what the outcome of the studies were found in the US, in fact, you know, with those six patients that found to have blood clots. So the suspension that took place here was for exactly the same reason, to do more clinical studies on what the risk is of the blood clotting, but also more importantly, how the treatment protocols needs to happen and what symptoms needs to be watched out for. So as of last week as well, the suspension was lifted and Johnson & Johnson can continue to be rolled out in our country as well. But there are additional protocols that are being issued with the Johnson & Johnson vaccine. And what that means is that people that are prone to blood clotting, they are informed up front. They are also told what symptoms to watch out for so that there is a proactive reaction that can happen as opposed to a reactive reaction on the blood clotting. As we all know, however, the risk is extremely low of this blood clotting risk.
From what you have seen so far, what has been the overall attitude of how South Africans have been reacting to the disease, one, and two, the vaccination process embarked by the government and being aided by organizations such as yours?
Yeah, it's a good question. So I think South Africans generally have been compliant with regards to the various levels of lockdown that we've had in the country and generally have been compliant to the social distancing, wearing of masks, and the sanitization. So the behavioral aspect has been there to a large extent. You know, Peter, what is always challenging is in the lower income communities where there are maybe six people in a small two-bedroom place or eight people living in a small two-bedroom place. That's always the risk. How do they social distance? So that's always a socioeconomic challenge we face. Through this process, by the way, South Africans have been actually quite critical of government in its lateness of rolling out the vaccine. So a lot of people have been waiting for the vaccine so that we can get the economy going, that people can get their lives back in some respects and get back to normal, however the new normal will look like. But having said that, there are also the skeptics, right, as is skeptics exist all over the world. And so there will be people who will opt not to take the vaccine. From our perspective, we've seen a lot of corporates, companies, have been very excited and eager to get the vaccine. They want to get all of their staff vaccinated so that they can get back to working as productively as possible. And that's an exciting time, obviously, because it means the economy can open up. It means we can open up our borders. It means people can start traveling as well. And so there's a lot of excitement. But I think I would venture a guess that the studies tell us that there's about 40%, 40, 45% of people who are skeptical about getting the vaccine and who'd rather want to take a wait-and-see approach.
Should South Africa expect a third wave of the virus, the COVID-19 virus or disease?
Absolutely. So our predictions is, in fact, we're seeing it starting now already. We always expected our actuarial department, in fact, has done a lot of work on this, and we expected that the start of the third wave will commence now beginning of May, in fact. And the reason why we predicted that date was also because it would be 2 weeks post the Easter holidays, you know, when a lot of people would be having a lot of get-togethers and socializing, etc. So, in fact, just yesterday I was reading a report that in the 4 of the 7 provinces in South Africa have already started to see an increase in new daily infection rates. So we will expect it to continue probably until about mid to late June, where we will hopefully turn the curve again and start getting out of it. And hopefully, Peter, you know, with this third wave, the one thing that we are grateful for is that a number of the healthcare workers, firstly, have been vaccinated, so the frontline workers will be safe. That's one really good thing. And secondly, as soon as we can start rolling out the vaccine for the over 60s, it means that our healthcare facilities will be able to handle the third wave a lot better than what we could in the first or second waves.
Ahmed Bandeka, CEO of MedScheme, speaking with my colleague Peter Clote. This is the Voice of America, and you're listening to Nightline Africa. And coming up in the second half of the program, the Saturday Music Spot from our collection of music from across the continent. But first, as teenage pregnancies soared in Kenya during coronavirus lockdowns in the urban slum of Kibera, teachers and parents looked for a way to reduce the problem. The idea was to form a ladies' football club to direct their energy in a healthy way. And they became so good, they are about to join Kenya's professional women's soccer league. Brenda Mlinya reports from Nairobi.
In the heart of Africa's largest urban slum, Kibera, two amateur Kenyan football soccer teams, the Undugu Queens and the Queens Starlets, are playing a friendly game. The ladies' teams were formed as Kenyan authorities said teenage pregnancies jumped at least 40% during COVID lockdown measures. Founder and coach of the Undugu Queens Club, Laban Ouma, says the goal was to direct their energy in a healthy way.
The impact that this program gives to the girl is that it is protecting them from the ills within the social structure where we are living. We are living in an environment full of drug and substance abuse. We have early pregnancies too.
16-year-old Winfred Nyaboke joined the Undugu Queens in late 2020 after her 15-year-old best friend Ruth got pregnant. Kenya's schools have been closed during the pandemic to curb the spread of the coronavirus. But teenagers left at home while parents work led to a surge in teen pregnancies and school dropouts like Ruth. Nyaboke says Ruth refused to join the football team, deciding to play with boys instead and ended up pregnant. I decided to keep myself busy with football, she says. I knew it would keep me from falling into the same trap. The Undugu Queens practice every day of the week and have games every weekend. A parent of one of the players, Rose Nguli, sells snacks on the sidelines while the young women play football. She says the demanding schedule helps keep their daughter safe and healthy. She says they are very thankful when the girls are playing football because they will not leave the pitch to go and engage in destructive behavior. The football club also offers a mentorship program for schoolwork as well as access to menstrual healthcare products. But some players still become pregnant. 16-year-old Lavin Ondaki is back on the team after delivering her baby. She says she was forced to stop playing football after getting pregnant. But now that her baby is a bit older, Ondaki says she can play once again. The team's hard work appears to be paying off. The Undugu Queens are set to join the Nairobi County Women's Football League after the coronavirus suspension of sports events is lifted. Brenda Mulinya for VOA News, Nairobi.
Ladies,
It's now time for our Saturday Music Sport. Yes, time to relax and enjoy great African music.
Stone filled with this. to be like when they call it breast rewind. Yeah. Cause it's the kind of feeling that you can't deny. Today. Me feel it and me hear it each and every day. See, I can understand it, why you trip me this way. Why does love have to be this way? Tell me you wanna, but we can't wait for you. Your love to make me happy, to make me hate to you. Baby, boo, I pray for you. Now waiting I could do. Cause this love is hard to me too. I wish that I didn't have a heart. Then I only stone filled deep inside. I didn't have a heart, yeah. I wish that I didn't have a heart. Yeah. Now only stone filled deep inside. I didn't have a heart.
My controller, maybe my own ruler. baby's only you, yeah. Yes, I be your sugar daddy, and she don't want nobody but me. You got me going so crazy, I don't want nobody but you. I'm a ruler, oh, have you seen my? I'm a ruler, so sweet and fine like I'm a ruler. She comes in the morning, I'm a ruler. Still have her in my night time. I'm a ruler, gives me hangover. I'm a ruler, but I don't care, no. I'm a ruler, so smooth and clean like I'm a ruler. Don't ever touch my. I'm a ruler, oh, have you seen my? I'm a ruler, so sweet and fine like I'm a ruler. She comes in the morning, I'm a ruler. Still have her in my night time. I'm a ruler. Gives me hangover, I'm a ruler, but I don't care, no. I'm a ruler, so smooth and clean like I'm a ruler. Don't ever touch my, I'm a ruler.
Now your face
when they see every day. Say you know the deal. Oh my baby, baby, I am for real, yeah. Oh baby, I am for real. For your loving girl, I am for real, yeah. I hope say you know the deal. Oh my baby, baby, I am for real, yeah. I promise you good loving. I go be Batman and you go be Robin. Hey, hey. Every day we be balling. None of these haters be tell me nothing. Hey, hey. Look them, ask them, line up, yeah. Them no one make we turn up, yeah. From sundown to sun up, them they find ways with them go divide us, yeah. Itty be dibby body day. Now your love I wanna feel every day. Itty be dibby body day. Now your body I want touch every day. It be the body day. I thank God say you come my way. It be the body day. Now your face I wanna see every day. Yeah. I am for real, yeah. Oh baby, I am for real. For your loving girl, I am for real, yeah. I hope say you know the deal. Oh my baby, baby, I am for real, yeah. Oh baby, I am for real. For your loving girl, I am for real, yeah. I hope say you know the deal. Oh my baby, baby, I am for real, yeah. I am for real, yeah. I am for real, yeah. It be deep by the day. Now your love I'm when they feel every day. It be deep by the day. Now your body I want touch every day. Say you know the deal. Oh my baby, baby, I am for real, yeah. Oh baby, I am for real. For your loving girl, I am for real, yeah. I hope say you know the deal. Oh my baby, baby, I am for real, yeah.
And that was our Saturday Music Spot. I sincerely hope you enjoyed the music. Nightline Africa comes to you on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC from the English service of the Voice of America and from the rest of the Nightline Africa team. I thank you for joining us tonight, and join us again tomorrow, Sunday. I'm Douglas Impuga.